Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am here with...
Rowan Nixon.
He is here with me. Terry DeKester is going to try to call in the latter part of the hour so we can be fully raucous. But until then, Garland and I will have to try to raucous it up, just the two of us. There's still plenty to talk about for the two of us. Our topic is going to be the what I like to call the overhyped trifecta, the trio of stories that the media seems to report in trio and that the Republican Party seems to breathlessly argue in trio is going to be Nixonian. So, of course, I'm talking about Benghazi, kind of an old scandal, a few new details, the Associated Press, and the IRS. And we'll go over the details of those scandals in just a minute. But Garland, I don't know about you, but I've been arguing on air with various and sundry conservatives that they find from under rocks. And the last one that I argued with just Friday, I said that Barack Obama will resign within a year.
You're right.
Well, yeah, I told him that I'd bet any amount of money on that one, and so we have a dinner. So that means I have to sit with this guy through dinner when he buys me dinner a year from now. When talk about overhyped. I mean, we could talk about the few nuggets and kernels of truth in all these stories, but wow, is this overhyped?
Yeah, Mark, it's kind of like this. I mean, you know, I was the same thing. I was debating some conservatives, and basically my point was, you know, none of them are a real story. And so what they're trying to say is, we're going to keep accusing you of things. We'll accuse you of one thing, and then that's pretty baseless. Accuse you of another, accuse you of another. We have no evidence that you have done anything wrong, but after we accuse you of enough things, we'll say, look at all the scandals. You know, it's kind of like if I were to take some balloons and make a little one of those little balloon giraffes and say, look, this is a giraffe. No, it's not. It's a bunch of balloons. And then I made another one and say, look, here's two of them. They've got to be giraffes because I got two of them. Well, look at that. I've got three balloon giraffes. That means they're all real giraffes. I don't care how many balloon giraffes you make. They're still balloons. These are still manufactured, overhyped stories. There is no evidence, no indication in any way, shape, or form that Barack Obama has done anything wrong in any of them. Yet, and here's what really burns me up. People on the left who are acting as though they're scandals also, who are buying right into this absurd premise that these are the humongous, you know, this is the Pentagon Papers.
Right. Well, that's why what I want to do over this hour is really go into some of the details, because the details matter. And it's really easy just to say scandal, Nixon, blah, you know. And by the way, the same guy who compared Barack Obama to Nixon actually had the audacity to later compare him to Hitler and Stalin. You know, why couldn't he find anybody worse? I mean, he really needs to work on it. On Satan. I was just trying to think of how much further they could go. But I can say this. This is the deepest scandal to affect the Obama administration since the birther scandal, the claim that he was not born in the United States, which, of course, was totally false, but it doesn't matter. As one conservative wrote to me on my website, hey, we got three now. And I, as I responded to him, I said, dude, 3 times 0 equals 0. And he's like, no, we got you now. And so I started to ask him some of the details about them. I said, should he have not investigated the AP leak? Silence. Well, do you think he should have or shouldn't have? I was trying to engage in a conversation to go through detail by detail each of the scandals. And he's like, we got you on Benghazi. Did you know that the talking points from the beginning all said that it was this demonstration? They were wrong, but there was nothing the administration did wrong. Silence. Oh, just shut up. We got you. We didn't even get on to the IRS. I mean, that's the point. It's all about shut up. Don't give us the details. You're in trouble. That's what that's their message. And interestingly, it was reported in the Washington Post today that the Heritage Foundation political wing, whatever wing it is that goes and asks people for money, urged the Republican Congress not to pass any legislation that could cause any kind of controversy and instead to focus entirely on the scandals. So they're basically saying, shut the government down. We have to focus on these things because any real governing might not lead the American people to give us a bunch of money, but we want this money and we're only going to get it if we talk about scandal and not about actually governing.
Right. We've got an issue with all of a sudden the issue with jobs, the sequester. And here's the fact of the matter. They were losing on everything. You know, they were actually losing. They were wrong. They were wrong with Obamacare. You know, they're having issues with the states that are refusing to take Medicare, the Medicaid expansion, are getting heat from hospitals and from the medical industry to try to force them to take it. The economy is picking up, yet they're trying to move forward with the sequester to try to, you know, try to blunt the economy improvement. The stock market is going up. All these unfortunate things for the Republicans are going on that happen to be good for the American people. Meanwhile,
okay,
we've got a job crisis, we've got other things going on, and the Republicans are saying, look, we don't have time to deal with the problems and issues of the American people.
Right.
We're trying to take down the press. The other part is this, and I got to throw this out. The Republican Party will defend their leaders no matter what. They will defend. They defended George Bush. Through the, you know, the weapons of mass destruction, through everything that happened, they defended George Bush to the end. Yet the Democrats can't wait all too often to join the Republicans and attack their guy, even when he didn't do anything wrong.
Well, that's why I really want to go through the details, because the details matter, and I don't want anyone to claim that we are waving our hands and saying this is just overhype and not giving the, and we're afraid of this, because I'm not afraid of these stories at all. I find the more you explore each of these stories, the more you, well, you understand them, and the more you frankly see that this is, well, it's not Obama's fault. If anything, I would argue, and this is actually where my criticism of Obama comes in, I would argue he's been too weak on all of these fronts, not too strong. But let me explain. Let's take them one by one. I'll give you the benefit. You could pick Benghazi, AP, or IRS. Where would you like to begin?
Let's start with Benghazi.
Okay, so Benghazi involves a real issue. A real issue. The real issue is why we didn't have sufficient embassy security. That's a real issue. It's an important issue. It's important to ask why the Republican Congress cut security to the State Department that led to us having insufficient security. It's also a real issue to ask why the CIA, frankly, messed up in not taking their secret annex and announcing it as a consulate so it could get Marine aid. All of that is a serious issue. What is not a serious issue is what the Republicans are focusing on, which is the fact that various talking points were edited. And let's just talk about the talking points briefly and then say whatever you want to say. So here's what we know about the talking points. The talking points were edited by the CIA and the State Department. And they were going back and forth. And the White House approved a CIA version that mentioned the name of the terrorist group that did the attack, Ansar al-Asari, that said that there were a number of militant extremist groups in Benghazi. All of that was approved by the White House. But then a State Department spokeswoman by the name of Victoria Nuland, who used to be an aide to Dick Cheney, She's a career civil service foreign service officer. I'm not saying that she's Republican or Democrat. I don't know, but she was definitely appointed by George Bush and worked under them. So again, I'm not saying she was doing a Bush agenda, but clearly she wasn't doing an Obama agenda either. She said that we should take it out because, one, we haven't done this group denies it and the investigation isn't complete, so we shouldn't accuse them prematurely. And number two, it was unfair to do what the CIA was doing, basically blaming the State Department, when this was a CIA facility and not a State Department facility. So Victoria Nuland, for her own bureaucratic reasons, rightly or wrongly, decided to edit the talking points. The last one in the chain was poor Ambassador Susan Rice, who read off the talking points that were presented to her, and that was used as the Republican excuse not to let her be Secretary of State. That's not a scandal.
No, my gosh. Well, holy crap. Well, here's the other thing, Mark. The other part of it is this. Number one, in the very beginning, if you listen to what Susan Rice said, it was absurd to say that she was misleading anyone. She repeatedly said, to the best of our knowledge.
Right. This is preliminary, she said.
We have now. There were continuous caveats. She would, on the Sunday talk show, she said, there's an ongoing investigation. We'll let you know more information as we get along. Now, here's what I don't understand. If you ask me, Garland, where were you yesterday? What happened yesterday? And I say, well, I'm still trying to figure out what happened yesterday, Mark. There's an ongoing investigation. I'll let you know when I know further. Based on the information I have now, it appears that blank, blank, blank.
Right.
And then you come back and say, well, Garland lied to me. How could Garland have lied to you when he continually told you repeatedly that what he was telling you was not concrete and could change. So from the very beginning, the idea that Susan Rice was lying when she repeated over and over and over that what she was saying was based on the information that she had now and that it could change, number one, that was ridiculous. But number two, the Bush administration repeated, they had in a neighborhood of 16 attacks on various consulates and embassies and U.S. Facilities around the world.
Right, 13 people died, yeah. Which is more than three times what happened in Benghazi.
But not once did the Republicans ever say, we need to look into this or there's a problem. So it's obvious what's going on here, and it's pretty absurd. And I think, I'm with you, I think the administration to some extent should, you know, kind of give them the proverbial finger. I think that to some extent they should say, look, guys, there is no scandal. Here's what we got. Do what you want with it.
Here's the thing that I find really sad. There is an issue here, a legitimate issue. The issue is one of embassy, consulate, diplomatic mission security around the globe. It's a serious issue. After all, it's not just George Bush, who you mentioned, under Bill Clinton. Our embassies in Tanzania and Kenya were attacked. Under Ronald Reagan in Lebanon, we were attacked.
Right.
I mean, this is something that's gone on for decades in virtually every presidential administration, and it's something that I think that Republicans and Democrats could and should work together on. We agree that our consulates and embassies abroad need more security. Actually, Republicans didn't agree before it happened. Remember, they cut aid to it. But
like $200 million or something that.
That's correct.
You know, but a lot of money was cut.
It was in Paul Ryan's budget. Remember Paul Ryan, the vice presidential nominee? Yep. But in any case, now they seem to agree. They seem to agree with us that this is an important thing. And Obama has put forward a new plan, more money, billions of dollars, a couple billion. It actually isn't that expensive in the scheme of things when you look at what other things cost, to aid embassy security. They're not even addressing this bill. And I think Barack Obama needs to go out on the stump proactively and say, I want more embassy security. Why are the Republicans against it? And they're going to say, well, we're not against it. Then why haven't you passed my bill? And really hype that bill. And it's a way to get ahead of the whole Benghazi situation. Because that is the issue in Benghazi. What is not the issue is the talking points. And one more thing about the talking points. The Republican claim from the get-go, from the moment Susan Rice went on TV, is that Susan Rice and, by extension, the entire Obama administration is hiding the fact that it's a terrorist attack and coming up with this stupid idea that it was a homemade video that caused people to be mad in a spontaneous demonstration. And they claim that she edited the talking points in order to add that silly idea. Well, that silly idea happens to be in all 12 versions of the talking points. From beginning to end, there are certain things that change. They change a consulate to diplomatic mission. They take out the mention to Al-Ansari. By the way, when I say they, I mean career Foreign Service Officer Victoria Nuland, who used to work for Dick Cheney. She takes it out for her own reasons that have nothing to do with, they may have to do with internal State Department CIA politics, but they have nothing to do with Democratic Republican politics. But the heart of the issue is the thing they claim that Susan Rice did wrong actually was in all versions of the talking points. And the reason why it was in all versions of the talking points is because the intelligence community, within a week afterwards, that was their considered judgment. It turns out to have been wrong. But you can understand why it was their considered judgment. Let me remind people. There was another attack on September 11th. It occurred in the morning. People forget it even happened. It occurred at our embassy in Cairo. There was a spontaneous demonstration. It did come from this stupid video. And the people of Cairo actually managed to breach our outer walls. And they didn't get into the internal walls. We had Marines to defend the embassy. That's part of the problem with what happened in Benghazi. It wasn't an official consular embassy. It was a secret CIA base, and that's why they didn't have enough people to defend it. But it was understandable that the intelligence community, having seen what happened in Cairo that very morning, would preliminarily think that the exact same thing happened in Benghazi, and that this terrorist group basically co-opted a pre-existing spontaneous demonstration. Now, that turned out not to be true, but that's what they believed at the time when Susan Rice said it, and that is simply beyond dispute. And yet I hear Republicans just today, a Sunday morning news show, again repeat this old canard that, what a silly idea that they thought of the demonstration. It may have been a silly idea, but I don't think it was. But even if it was, it's got nothing to do with the White House. It has to do with the intelligence community's preliminary findings.
Well, here's the other thing, too. I guess they've got one of two arguments. Argument one is that the White House knew it was a terrorist action and deliberately hid it from everyone. Well, what motivation they could possibly have for that, God only knows. I guess that's because the president's really a secret Kenyan Muslim terrorist is probably what...
No, their motivation, Garland, is that the president is high on his laurels from killing Osama bin Laden, and he didn't want any American to know that we were actually attacked by a terrorist group. As if that wouldn't come out anyway. But again, as has been proven, the White House was fine with it and was fine with specifically announcing the terrorist group. It was the State Department spokeswoman who changed the mind on that. But go ahead.
Yeah. And the other issue is, well, they thought it was one thing, but they were wrong. And it's really a terrible thing for an administration to, based on intelligence, think that, for instance, a country has weapons of mass destruction and end up being wrong. That's unacceptable.
Right. Of course, in that case, we know that it wasn't the considered judgment of the intelligence community. It was Dick Cheney literally, physically going to the bowels of the CIA, talking to the junior level people there, finding a little nugget of intelligence. And that, of course, is our friend Curveball, the notorious liar informant from Germany who claimed weapons of mass destruction and elevating that tiny, tiny piece of data against all the thousands that said Curveball was wrong. But that is called manipulating intelligence. What
right.
Obama did, ironically, in all these, and I want to talk about all of them, but in all these scandals, I think, if anything, the administration has been too passive. And by being too passive, they've let lower-level career service people make mistakes that they haven't corrected. And you could argue, and this actually I think is a fair challenge, that perhaps if they had stronger management style, that these mistakes wouldn't have happened. But the Republican claim is that Obama is intentionally attacking Americans and all this kind of stuff, when really the answer is Obama stayed out of these things because of complaints by Republicans. And now they say, after insisting that he stay out, we're going to get there with AP and IRS, after insisting he stay out, now they want say he wasn't in enough. He just can't
right.
win.
There's really nothing there. And the other thing about the talking points is this. They say, I'm watching Fox the other day, and I happen to be in the green room at Fox, so I'm sitting there looking there.
Right.
And I see, repeatedly on the air, the talking points were changed 12 times. Well, here's the thing about it, and I've worked for the government. I worked for a police department where there'd be, say, investigations, and of course you would have to make some kind of announcement. If there was a murder or whatever, or somebody missing, you'd have to make some kind of statement to the press. The talking points are always changed. You'd have first, you have like an information public information officer write the talking points. They give it to their supervisor who goes over it. When you're talking in the government, it's going to go through various intelligence agencies for approval. It's going to go to the State Department for approval. And every person that it goes to is going to look at it and take something out and add something in until finally it goes to the person at the top who sees it. Talking points are always changed, adjusted, reviewed a dozen or more times within the government for any issue. To say that it was the talking points were changed 12 times as evidence of a problem is not to admit that. I mean, the fact of the matter is nobody has said, normally when they're talking points, how many times are they changed? 5-10 times, at least.
At least. I mean, here's the point. This was changed a dozen times. It was seen by about a dozen people. I don't know about you, Garland. When I write a speech, I change it myself a dozen times, probably more. I'm kind of a perfectionist. I will look over something 10, 20, 30 times and make changes. And I make changes at the very last minute because, I want to make sure it's accurate.
Mark, do you remember a certain amount of words about yellow cake uranium in the speech that we found out? The yellow cake uranium that Saddam Hussein is trying to seek, yellow cake uranium, went in the State of the Union address, was taken out by the intelligence, was put back, was taken out, was put back, was taken out, was put back, and the people in the intelligence various intelligence services said they were astounded when they watched the State of the Union address to find that it was put back in. So
that's
the
true.
Fact is, within the Bush administration, something as critical as war, they changed it repeatedly and put it back in when they were deliberately told not to by the intelligence agency. But now, all of a sudden, something that's fairly matter-of-factly is the biggest scandal that's ever happened in history. It's phenomenal what's going on here.
Yeah, but that wasn't investigated because I guess that wasn't seen as important. All right, let's move on. Before we take a break, let's move on to talk a little bit about AP or IRS, because I want to demonstrate that all three scandals really are a mountain out of a molehill. But again, which would you like to go to next?
AP it is.
Let's do Associated Press. All right. The Associated Press is very interesting because here's a case where it's a complete damned if you do, damned if you don't. Let's go over the facts again because they matter. So we have the Associated Press learns of the CIA doing a very good thing. The CIA kind of messed up in Benghazi. They did a very good thing in Yemen. They have an operative. The operative discovers that Al-Qaeda is developing a new underwear bomb. This one has no metal in it, cannot be found by metal detectors. It's more sophisticated than the last underwear bomb. And they're going to put a suicide bomber on the air and on the airplane. And the authorities are not going to check his underwear. And he's going to blow it up and kill hundreds of people. Right, that's the plan. The CIA, to their credit, through their secret operatives, goes and foils that plan, saving at least hundreds of lives. Possibly more, depending on if the plane were to blow up over a major American city, you could imagine thousands of lives that would otherwise be lost.
The president should be prosecuted for that alone.
What's that?
I said the president should be prosecuted for that alone.
For Al-Qaeda developing a bombing plot?
No, for foiling the plot.
Oh, for foiling the plot.
I mean, I don't really know why, but I mean, if I was a Republican, that's what I'd say.
Well, no, here's what the Republicans said. So when the story was leaked by the Associated Press, the Republicans said, aha, there he goes again. The White House is claiming credit for foiling in that terrorist operation, which we all know is a good thing. How dare Obama leak this information to the press just to show off? He should have kept it secret, and he's leaking it just to show off what a good thing this administration has done. All right. And they even claimed that Attorney General Eric Holder was behind the leak, that the Attorney General himself personally leaked the information. And they said, Obama, if you're not leaking it, then we dare you, we defy you, we challenge you to get to the bottom of that leak. So
right. Mitch McConnell said there has to be an investigation. We demand an investigation.
That's right. So what happens? So Obama orders an investigation. Eric Holder orders an investigation. And the Attorney General says, look, you claim that I did this myself. Obviously, I didn't. I think the charge is ridiculous. But since the claim is that I did it myself, and since we all agree that, I can't fairly investigate myself, you know, it's very hard when you're investigating, you know, Mark, did you do this? No, Mark, I didn't. Obviously, you can't. So he said, I'll tell you what, I'm going to point this other guy, this deputy attorney general, well-respected guy by the name of James Cole. He's going to do the investigation, and I'm not going to know anything about it. I'll put up a wall of information. James Cole is in charge. They can investigate me. They can ask me all the questions they want. They can ask the White House all the questions they want. We did nothing wrong. Bring it on. We'll investigate the leak. We'll find out who did it, hopefully, and punish them. But we're staying out of it. So James Cole gets to work, and he asks everybody in government, including Attorney General Eric Holder, and he goes through Holder's papers and emails, and he goes through other government officials' papers and emails, and he does a pretty extensive investigation. But lo and behold, he can't find the leaker, which I got to say is not that extraordinary, because most government leakers are smart enough not to type in an email.
Right.
Hey, I am now leaking classified top secret information to you, and I'm letting you know what's going on. No, I mean, they know to meet someone in person or to meet a reporter or something like that. He can't find the leaker. So then comes the very interesting, actually legal question of when the government can go after the press to find the information, because the law is very simple. The leaker can get in trouble. The leakee can never get in trouble. When Dick Cheney told the secret identity of Valerie Plame, CIA agent, to Robert Novak, Dick Cheney may well should have been prosecuted for treason, but Robert Novak, the reporter, cannot be prosecuted. Same goes with the Pentagon Papers. The person who gave Daniel Ellsberg the Pentagon Papers could be prosecuted. The reporter cannot be prosecuted.
Right.
So that's the law, and because of that law, you can only go after the government officials. So the question is, when can you get information from reporters? And it happens to be a technical legal question. And the question is, it has to be something very serious. All right, Al-Qaeda trying to kill hundreds of people. I think that's serious. Number two, they have to have looked everywhere first. Well, I think James Cole pretty much looked everywhere first. I don't think anyone can argue that. I forget how many thousands of pages and hundreds of witnesses he examined, but I think that standard is met. The third standard, little closer, is whether it has to be narrow. And what did he do? He got 20 phone numbers from the Associated Press within a 2-month period, and he didn't listen to the phone calls, but he only got the numbers of who the reporters called. You can make an argument. Is that narrow enough? I think it's relatively narrow, but maybe it should have been 3 phone numbers over a 2-week period rather than 20 over a 2-month period. But I think that's a close question. And the fourth thing where I actually think James Cole made a mistake, and I'm willing to call it a mistake, but I don't think it was an Obama mistake, and that is you're supposed to warn the target in advance unless you think the information might go south, might escape. And in this case, this isn't a case of saying, reporter, give me your notebook, and the reporter could burn it, and you steal the notebook. This is a case of going to the phone companies and saying, hey, I want to see what phone numbers you have. In this case, if you had told the Associated Press in advance and given them an attempt to challenge it in court, the numbers weren't going anywhere. You simply tell the phone companies, keep the numbers while we resolve this issue. The terrorist attack attempt was about a year earlier. I actually think the government made a mistake on point four, and most of the press agrees with me. They should have notified the Associated Press first. But this is a complicated legal thing. It has nothing to do with Obama or Holder, because they farmed it out to James Cole. If you want to complain about James Cole's conduct, go right ahead. He's a public servant and long-term public servant. Let him defend himself. But this has nothing to do with Obama.
Right.
That's the long story there, Bal. Go ahead, make your comment.
The other part of it is this. We can say, based on the very, very sketchy information we have about the investigation, that he should have warned them. However, if they were to go to court and he was to make his case based on the information he had, that he had justification for not warning them, we don't know right now whether he did or didn't have justification for not warning them. It is possible that he may go before a judge and show the judge, look, I didn't warn him for this reason, and a judge may say, that's valid. So we don't know enough
that's
about
true.
The investigation to say that that's the thing. We can speculate that
right.
He should have warned the AP. That's all sheer speculation. But not having enough information about the investigation, we cannot say for sure that he should have warned the AP.
So
keep in mind, this is nothing but a speculation. It's possible that James Cole may have done something that could have been done a little bit differently, that would have looked a little bit better, but it still wasn't illegal.
No, well, here's the thing. A court may well end up deciding whether it was improper or not. The irony about all of this is that Barack Obama and the Democrats have been arguing since at least 2009 that we need a solid press shield law that makes exactly this standard clear. This standard, by the way, is not even a legal standard. It's a Justice Department guideline that was established after the Vietnam War. So frankly, even if they violated their own guideline, we can say tisk tisk, and I'm willing to say that. I'm willing to say, from what I can determine, and I obviously don't know all the facts, my guess is they did violate that fourth provision. They should have notified the AP. But listen, at the end of the day, a court's going to decide that. But this wasn't the law. The worst thing they did was violate their own guidelines, and it will be determined whether they did or they didn't, and we can say bad James Cole or right James Cole. But just imagine, this is the question I tried to ask my conservative listener who refused to engage in me. Number one, should they have done the leak investigation? Well, every Republican was screaming to the high heavens, you gotta look into the leak. So once you agree they have to do the leak investigation, question two was, well, should Holder have been personally involved? Should Obama have been personally involved? And the Republicans would say, no, we accused them of misconduct. They can't be personally involved. Okay, number three, then do you disagree with the appointment of James Cole, who is a respected non-political public servant who's been around a long time? You know, let them challenge his integrity. Well, they're not going to do that. Once you agree that Obama should have investigated it, and shouldn't have been involved in it, and appointed James Cole, then comes the kind of interesting for us legal wonks question of whether or not James Cole followed all the Justice Department procedures. But it ain't a scandal, and it doesn't involve the Obama administration. It's whether this particular public servant followed these procedures correctly in doing this task, which is, I don't know, probably boring to most people.
It really is. I mean, in worst case scenario, here's the worst case scenario. He did violate their own standards.
Right.
The next question is this: who was harmed? You know, who was, where do we find harm? Where do we find that someone was actually hurt, that he did something that was harmed, that's harmed? The fact of the matter is this, if he'd have went to court and got him, or he got him any other way. But as you said, if we get away from all of the fuzzy stuff and get back to this, this is one of the three legs of the stool that they claim that they are going to destroy Obama. This is one of the three pillars. This is one of the three ungodly, unthinkable, horrible investigations for which he should be, I guess, strung up. But yet and still, we have not found anything anywhere within this particular, quote, scandal, where the president is accused in any way, shape, or form of doing something wrong.
It's got nothing to do with Obama. And if you're saying he should have taken a stronger hand over this investigation, can you imagine if he'd done that when he'd been accused of misconduct? Oh, you're investigating yourself? You can't do that. It's got nothing to do with Obama. Do career prosecutors make mistakes? They do. And James Cole may well have made a mistake, and I support press freedom. Frankly, when the ACLU complains about this, I'm sympathetic. But they're not complaining it as an Obama scandal. They're complaining that Justice Department should warn the press so they have a chance to negotiate. I think they're right on that point. But whether they are or they aren't, it's got nothing to do with the president. It's not a scandal. It's actually a fairly technical legal question that should be resolved one way or the other. And I think it should be resolved in the way of press freedom. But remember, it's Republicans who insist that throw away press freedom. We need to get to the bottom of leaks and help fight terrorists. They're the ones who are the first to throw away these things. So I'm sympathetic to the ACLU's criticisms. I am not sympathetic to the conservatives who said, fry the bastard, find the leak. What? You went too hard to find the leak.
Well, you know, here's the funny thing. It arises from an absurd accusation in the first place. The original accusation is, oh, they're leaking that they caught a, how dare the administration brag
right.
that they actually stopped the terrorists,
right.
You know, which there's no evidence that they bragged. It got leaked. It got leaked.
Right.
How dare, now, it started because, think about this. Because they stopped the terrorist attack.
Right.
Based on the fact that they stopped the terrorist attack, there's got to be an investigation. Nobody says, hey, good job.
Right.
Say, you stopped a terrorist attack. Well, somewhere within stopping a terrorist attack, you did something that was horrible.
It's amazing. All right. So as far as I'm concerned, the score is 2 times 0 is 0. Let's take a break, Garland. When we come back, let's deal with the one they consider the biggest scandal of all, having to do with the IRS. We'll be right back with the Raucous Caucus. If you want to call in, it's 202-889-9797. We do hope that Terry's going to join us in this last half hour, but you can join us too. Just give us a call. 202-889-9797. Right back, right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine, sitting here with
Garland Nixon.
And we are going over the what I like to call the overhyped trifecta. I think we have destroyed any arguments that Obama did stuff wrong on Benghazi and or the Associated Press scandal, at least the parts that the Republicans are focusing on. There's a nugget of problem in both, but both of which, you know, embassy security and whether or not a deputy attorney general made a mistake in a prosecution, both of which, in essence, were things that the Republicans disagreed with.
Well, hey, Mark. Here's the other thing. If you look at what our discussion, not only that, what we have found is the Republicans haven't even made an actual allegation that the president did something wrong. They haven't made an allegation. Of specifically anything. They've said he's done bad things. He's done wrong. He's got to be, he's got to be held accountable. He's accountable. He should be impeached. Oh, my gosh, there's a scandal. Specifically tell me what accusations you have that he violated a law, a policy, a procedure, that he specifically, as the president, violated anything or did something wrong. They don't have an answer for that.
Well, because he didn't. but then they're going to say he needs better management over his underlings. But and that actually is a fair argument if it were not for the case that the Republicans are upset that he ever exerts control. As I pointed out with the AP scandal, if he had exerted control, they would consider that to be an improper self-investigation. And in Benghazi, the woman who changed the talking points happens to have been an appointee of the Bush administration. All right, let's move on to the IRS, though. Because in this case, we also have, yes, an appointee of the Bush administration making some mistakes. Let's go through, the chronology matters because people just want to throw up their hands and blame Obama. Let's do the chronology here. So to understand the IRS investigation, the first thing you have to understand is what 18 U.S.C. 501 subsection C subsection 4 stands for. And that, of course, is the IRS code, and it's the thing that regulates these entities. By the way, I believe we have Terry D. Kester. Is that correct?
Oh, you do, you lucky
holy
dog.
Moly.
Oh, my God. He has appeared out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
We were doing so well, Garland. We were doing so well.
Let the pigeons loose.
All right. So, yeah. Terry, just to bring you up to speed, we've already completely discounted the Benghazi and AP stories as ridiculous.
Good.
And we're now moving on to the IRS. So I was starting to explain.
What happened to the trifecta?
Well, two of the trifecta horses were lying on the ground dead, but we're moving on to the third one.
Okay.
And interesting, because that's exactly what I call it, the overhyped trifecta, and I think, or OT. Anyway, so with the IRS, again, I was explaining that the heart of it has to do with what are these 501c4s, which sounds complex. 501c4, that's some fancy thing. And it is. It's actually a title. I've looked it up. It's been in the U.S. code for 100 years. It's been around since 1913, which interestingly is the exact same year that income taxes first became a part of our Constitution. So the first basically tax statute said this. They said, look, we're going to tax corporations, we're going to tax for-profit entities, but there's certain groups we're not going to tax. For example, we're not going to tax churches. We've decided separation of church and state. We're not going to tax churches, mosques, synagogues, religious institutions. That happens to be 501c3. We're also not going to tax social welfare organizations, and that's 18 U.S.C. 501c4.
And that includes the Cook brothers.
Well, we're going to get to that. So what the code says is it has to be exclusively for social welfare, exclusively. And it even gives examples. If the community gets together and decides to build a park, or if they decide to build a school, or to set aside housing for low-income people, or they want to beautify the highways. These are examples of social welfare, benefits a large number of people, and doesn't have anything political in it. So the IRS takes this, and decades ago, instead of just leaving it the way the statute was written, exclusively for social welfare, they say, well, it can't be primarily for political purposes. Now, I don't think building a school or beautifying a highway has anything political at all to do with it. But they change the standard, even though the law is clear, exclusively social welfare. And they say, well, you know, as long as it's not primarily political, if it's 49% political, that's okay. Even then, 501c4s kind of languished. People didn't really use them because there were limits on corporate contributions. Then comes our friend, well, our enemy, the Supreme Court Citizens United case, 2010, and they say, hey, you can give unlimited contributions. And so people looked and they said, well, 501c4 is anonymous. You don't have to disclose donors. And great, you get a tax exemption, and we can be 49% political. So even though the statute says exclusively non-political, exclusively social welfare. So Tea Party organizations start flooding the doors and coming in, and a few progressive institutions as well, but the vast majority are Tea Party and other right-wing organizations. And the folks in Cincinnati, this is the IRS way station that's handling all these tax-exempt things, they're overwhelmed. They have some 60,000 applications, and there's about 200 people to process all these things. So they say, well, okay, what's political, what's not political? Building a park, not political. Building a school, not political. Tea Party sounds political to us. And again, I defy anyone from the right to claim the Tea Party is not a political organization.
Hey, Mark.
Social welfare.
I got to throw this in there.
Go ahead.
They're not political. Let me think about this. Republican Party. Democratic Party. Green Party. Tea Party. How in the heck can you call yourself a party and say, well, we're not political. What are you? We're the Democratic Party. We have nothing to do with how about the Tea Party. T stands for tax enough already. So the tax enough already party has nothing to do with politics.
The reality is,
gentlemen, they never use that name. They don't use the name, whether it's Democrat, Republican, or Tea Party. They form these bogus organizations
that have, you know, only like three officers needed to run them.
Yep.
And you can call it any darn thing you want. And you can call it, you know, Garland shoe goodness, you know, formation. And file your forms. And
shoe goodness?
I was trying to give Garland some social credit.
Shoe goodness?
Yes, he needs
that
to
That sounds
be
like a bad sneeze. Shoe goodness!
He needs to be more generous with his wealth, is what I'm trying to say.
I see.
Didn't want to get into Garland today. I love him, and that's all.
I see. Well,
but you can call you can name the thing anything you want, and
right.
The real crime of it is in a 503. You know, all of your information is public.
That's right. 501c3 is public.
Yeah,
501c4 is private because people
thought,
well, we need to find out if you're really a church or not, so that has to be public. But when it comes to beautifying a park, we really don't care who you are, even if you're some dictator, you know, whatever, you're making our parks beautiful or you're building a school. It's social welfare, so there's no real harm in being anonymous. Frankly, some people are anonymous do-gooders, and they say, yeah, I want to build that school, and I don't want my name on that park or that school. So it actually kind of makes sense if you look at it without bad intent. The worst, by the way, of the 18 U.S.C. 501c4s is Crossroads GPS, Karl Rove's organization,
right.
Mm-hmm. Which it was approved. And in sum total, 501c4 spent more than $1 billion in political campaigns. Now, would you and I give to a candidate? You can only give up to $200. They ask us what we do for a living, and we don't get a tax exemption. And that's fine with me. Congress has decided that you don't get special write-offs for influencing the political system. But now, through this loophole, people can go in and spend, even though it's supposed to be exclusively for social welfare, you can spend all this money, on political campaigns. So the IRS was right to scrutinize this stuff.
Yeah, but the important thing to realize behind all of this, and I think you guys do, and I suspect and hope our listeners do too, is this is not something that's just happening as a haphazard twisting of the law or twisting of opportunities. This is systematically planned by the 1%, maybe even the top 8%. But it's systematically planned, whether it's Citizens versus United, whether it's the 504s, whatever it is, they look for every possible loophole they can get and manipulate so that they can literally sustain and increase their wealth and the public and the common good be damned.
So,
and they've got millions and millions of lawyers getting extraordinary fees to work all this out, to find the loopholes, so that banks don't have to pay any taxes, that Koch brothers don't have to pay any taxes, so that they can manipulate the political system to their advantage.
And ultimately,
that's my sagacity for the day.
Okay.
And ultimately, we get here. And what I mean by this, right now, we've got people out of work. We need to do something about that. We've got seniors who aren't getting their meals. We've got kids who aren't getting free records that they've got before. We've got the poorest of the poor suffering. We've got all these things going on that need to be addressed. And now they are able to turn the attention of our media, which isn't hard because they're the Jerry Springer media, away from seniors who are starving to death in their houses because Meals on Wheels was cut off from the sequester, and talk about things that are absolutely irrelevant to the ongoing struggles of the average working class or working poor or poor American.
And mislead the public with this mantra of jobs. I could walk out on the street now and say, hey, I'm going to steal money from 47 people by gunpoint, which is legal, of course, you know, but I'm doing it to create jobs. And I guarantee you everybody would say, oh, good, Terry's out creating jobs. He's not robbing people.
So, gentlemen, go ahead.
My point is, yes, they are manipulating the tax system as well, you know, all over the country for benefits for companies to be, you know, reestablished, supposedly, where they open a new facility and they hire two people and the rest are robots, and they get a $49 billion tax deduction, just like the hotel down in where WPFW used to be, you know, $49 million tax write-off to get rid of WPFW.
So, gentlemen,
nice work,
I want you to think of the CIA, excuse me, the IRS agent in Cincinnati. All right. So you've got 60,000 petitions coming in. It's far more than double what went in the year before. And you're trying to say, Political, not political. Political, not political. Political is going to have to have extra scrutiny. I don't know how you determine whether something's 49 or 51% political. But clearly building a park, not political. The Republicans complained about the brother of Barack Obama in Kenya who set up a foundation to help, I think it was Kenyan schools. And they said, hey, that one got approved quickly. Well, you know what? Helping Kenyan schools isn't political. It just isn't. You go there and you say, you know what? This Tea Party group, they're political and they haven't filled out the forms correctly. Oh, this Tea Party group, they're political. They haven't filled out the forms correctly. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do a quick search on all our petitions for anything that has Tea Party, and we're going to do it to be fair. We don't want to say that the Kansas Tea Party is approved and the St. Louis Tea Party is not approved, and they have different standards. We want to apply the same standards across all these groups, to be fair, because we don't want to say, oh, well, you know, this criteria we're going to use for one Tea Party, not for the other. So they do a search term. They say Tea Party, and that sets aside all the Tea Party. Then they find the ones that say Patriot. They find the ones that say 912. They put those aside. And they find progressive groups as well. The only thing they didn't do, which they should have done, is they should have done a search term for progressive and put all the ones with the word progressive in them aside. It turns out there were a lot of progressive organizations put aside, but they didn't do that search term. And so actually, although there were 75 or so Tea Party groups, there was a total of 300 groups that they set aside for special scrutiny. And the only one they turned down was Emerge America, a progressive group that dedicated to electing Democratic women. That one they turned down. They didn't turn down any of the Tea Party groups. They just subjected them to extra scrutiny, which took a lot of time because there's a lot of employees. That is the huge scandal. And the only thing left to know about that scandal is it all happened under the direction of a career civil servant by the name of Don Shulman, appointed by George W. Bush.
And regardless, he will have to resign now.
He's already resigned. He's been out since November. It's the new guy.
He's the lobbyist now.
Yeah, it's the new guy that came in after the thing had already happened, Stephen Miller. He came in. He's the acting director. None of it happened under his watch. It was fixed before his watch. And they complained, well, Stephen Miller, you knew about it, but didn't tell Congress about it. So you got to go. Obama's mad. Stephen Miller has to go. But just to be very clear, Bush appointee makes a mistake. Low-level employees in Cincinnati make a mistake. They do it under the direction of a Bush appointee who you can argue wasn't watching them carefully enough. The whole thing is fixed. Then Obama's people come in, and the fact that they didn't tell Congress enough time means that that he has to go, and he's already been fired. What's the scandal?
Well, what's the scandal is how sick the whole situation has gotten, because this is an attempt by the right wing, by the super rich, in every way possible to destroy everything that was created during the FDR administration.
Yes.
Everything that was created in the LB Johnson situation, or administration rather, everything that's been created in the Obama administration. This is to put back every social progressive step that has been made for the last 100 years so that they can go right back to the open, blatant robber barons that they are.
Colin?
Yeah, and let's not forget the attack on the union. And I'll tell you what it is. You know, there's a term, be familiar with it. I was former law enforcement, and so you know, I of course taught in the academy and all various terms that people had. One of them is a term called jostling, which was it came about during the early 1900s when they had the World's Fair and there was a lot of pickpockets. So they worked in pairs. Jostling is, Mark and I want to pick Terry's pocket. We walk up, I bump into Mark, I spill my stuff on him, and while Mark's recovering from all of that, Terry reaches over and grabs his wallet. That's jostling. So it's illegal.
That's a good idea. Can we do that?
We've already done it to you, Terry. You just missed it. You didn't notice.
Check
your right back pocket. It's gone.
So that's what I would say. All this is jostling. What they're doing is they are our attention, they're creating a diversion so we don't see their hands in our pockets, so that we don't see them doing exactly what Terry said, is destroying the social safety net, is ripping apart the union, so that we don't focus on the things they're doing that are going to leave us tired and before you know it, the factories will move back from Bangladesh, and because we'll be making $2 a month, and they'll be coming in on us because there'll be no National Labor Relations Board, and there'll be no union.
They just rejected, by the way, Obama's latest appointee to the NLRB. Go ahead, Terry.
Well, and they're so effective with this now that it is becoming blatant. I mean, they simply are getting away with it, and this is what scares me most in our society. They are getting away with these blatant acts. The mayor of Portland, Oregon, announced, literally, this is the quote, he is going to kill the police officers' union.
Kill?
Yeah, that's the headline. That's the headline. That's his quote.
Wait a minute, wait a minute, wait a minute. Portland, Oregon, isn't that the land where people hug trees and sing Kumbaya? You have a Republican that's your mayor?
The Tea Party and the right wing is everywhere.
In Portland, Oregon?
It is much more advanced than you would possibly imagine.
I thought that was...
Where you go in this country.
A bunch of owls and tree huggers in Portland.
That's part of Oregon. The east of Oregon is cowboy land, a wannabe Texas area.
Yeah, but the mayor of Portland, that strikes me as someone who should be a Democrat. But all right.
Blue is the bluest state. You go out to West Carolina, you go out to the Eastern Shore, and it's Tea Party heaven.
Well, that's true.
It depends on where you go.
They're
playing the harp so well. I mean, people, you know, again, it's always about we're here to create jobs. Only private industry, going back to Mitt Romney, can possibly create jobs. We're the only ones that really care about you because we're trying to create jobs, even though we're going to pay you $2 an hour. You know, and the public has fallen for that nonsense so that any distraction easily distracts from any political or progressive issue that might help them because they know, the public knows or thinks that it is the Tea Party, the businessmen, the connivers that are actually going to help them. And how we correct that, gentlemen, boy, I don't know.
But here's my problem, all right? Now, I've just spent the better part of an hour giving you, gentlemen, and I'm sure you both knew it, giving our listeners all of the detailed facts behind every one of these so-called scandals. And there are a lot of details to each of them. And I venture to say less than 3% of Americans know these details. So they can listen to the Raucous Caucus, they can be well informed, they can go out and tell their friends, or they can be part of the 90%+ that says IRS is watching our taxes and the press is being investigated by the government and the government is hiding terrorist attacks. And well, I just did that overhype in about 15 seconds. And I can scare a lot more people with those 15 seconds than I can get people to listen to an hour of talk radio.
Well, it's also, you know, you got to admit and understand that our society has become so incredibly complex. It truly is, technologically, socially, every other way. It's totally complex. People look for simple answers. And that's why Republicans are so successful. It's the same reason, the same analogy you can use. You guys were talking about the trifecta are going to. You know, horse racing in general is down as a business. It's just in the pits. I mean, nobody goes to horse races anymore. Yes, you got the Kentucky Derby and the big hype ones, but it's a dying business. Why is it a dying business? Because you have the lottery. Actually, betting on horses takes a little bit of work. You know, you got to do some study. You got to know the jockey. You got to know the horse. You got to know the conditions to make any intelligent bet. What intelligence does it require to play the lottery?
It sure sounds like you put a little money on the ponies in your spare time, Terry.
No, I did. I will remind you of this. There was a study when I was living in Manhattan. There was a study that the Daily News ran for 3 years. Who could make the most reliable money, a horse racer, stock market, or commodities? For 3 years solid, starting with $10,000 each, the guy playing the horses did the best money because he had real information.
Right. Yeah. That's a good point. That is a very, very good point, Terry. If you really study the horses, their record, how they are on a mud track, you're actually making a rational decision based on a quantifiable data as opposed to everything else.
Well, let me ask you, gentlemen, where we go from here, because it's my concern that you wave a red flag in front of the media, you cry scandal, and you say, you know, buzzwords, terrorists in Benghazi, IRS attacking people and the press being trampled, and people won't take the time to realize that Obama has nothing to do with any of these scandals or that they're really much less than meets the eye. And suddenly, second term, you've already heard it. Second term is around. Obama's dead. He's a lame duck. I mean, he's been in office his second term, what, 4 months?
I'll make a quick statement. First of all, as soon as I heard this AP, I thought to myself, well, you know, to say that the press is arguing about about what the government is doing is like saying, you know, there's a dog and he's biting his master's hand. You know, because
did we lose him?
Garland?
Did I lose you guys?
No. I think we just lost Garland.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
I heard some beeps. I think maybe his phone was dying or something. I don't know. Or maybe it's Obama who's shutting off the press. Go ahead, right wing wackos. Go for it.
It might have been Garland's bookie trying to get through to him.
Oh yeah, probably. Yeah. He just learned what you said about playing the horses, and he decided to go ahead and try that.
Yeah, but it really is sad, and your question and concern is totally valid. And how do we break this? I don't know. One of the ways I think to break it is actually to put a lot of pressure on NPR and PBS. We're not supposed to mention them because they have become part of the political tool. They are not objective anymore. They are controlled by the right to a large degree, as Greg Palast calls them. You know, PBS is, you know, public petroleum radio. I mean, PBR, you know, the National Petroleum Radio. And it's largely true. We've lost control of that, too, through Republican manipulation.
But here's the problem. How do you I think it was Mark Twain that said that a lie travels halfway around the world while the truth is just getting his shoes on. I mean, sounds like Garland's back. Garland, are you back with us?
Oh, yeah, guys. I don't know what happened. I lost you.
Well, we think it's your problems with technology. But
your bookie was calling.
Yeah, Terry thinks it's your bookie. I don't know. What were you saying, Garland?
I was simply saying that, you know, the press is always there to help. Anytime the government, the right wing, the corporations, the top 1% want to start another war, or they want to, you know, engage in new policy that's going to take all the money from the poor or do away with the social safety net, the press is always right there like their lapdogs to help them along with those policies. The press now, most of the major press is owned by 3 or 4 major corporations, so I'll never be there anymore to say, oh boy, we got to look out for the press, because the press, they're not our friends anymore.
No, they are.
Well, see, I'm not going to go that far. The Associated Press strikes me as one of the relatively not political branches, and I'm going to stand up for the freedom of the press. I actually think, as I've studied the situation, that probably Deputy Attorney General James Cole made the wrong call on this one. I'm willing to wait and see what the courts decide. But again, and so I support freedom of the press. It's got nothing to do with Obama, but at the same time, you know, I study the situation. I want to be fair here. I think they may have overreached. But again, a court will decide that, and I think a press shield law supported by Democrats and Obama would make this very clear for the future. So I don't want to throw all the press out with the bathwater. The point is, it's not an Obama scandal. That's the point.
And if you don't listen to the Raucous Caucus, you don't have any idea what's going on. Hey, guys, I got to run. My horse has just arrived.
Aha. Uh-huh.
I will be talking to you all next week. Thank you so much.
Well, ride it off into the sunset, and don't forget to jump those hurdles. We wouldn't want him to have a broken leg. All right, so thank you, Terry. Garland, any last comments on how we get past the hype and into the facts of these scandals?
I think the best we can do is people like you and I continue to spread the good word, to spread the reality, to spread details. We can continue doing what we're doing. We can't count on, you know, I haven't even been watching a lot of the press, even MSNBC or some of the so-called left-leaning press, because they're buying into this absurd paradigm, and it's absurd paradigm, and it's making me sick. So
yeah.
We gotta keep doing, talking, you know, saying what we're saying. The other thing is, I think the Obama administration, I've said this, I think they ought to give them, you know, they ought to just say, look, there's nothing here. You guys do what you want. There is nothing here. I don't think they should continue to react to these absurd claims.
See, I don't know. It's tough. If you don't react, then they say you're stonewalling. I think the answer is to give out the facts, point out how minimal the facts are, And to simply say, hey, you know, but here's the thing. So this Bush appointee, the Treasury Inspector General, who found the whole IRS problem, he himself admits there was nothing political here that they could find. So none of these scandals Republicans discovered for themselves, right? The Inspector General report came out. That's how they discovered it. The AP, well, they notified, James Cole notified the press after, notified AP after 90 days. Basically, it's the executive department ferreting out its own problems like it should. And for that, they should be praised. Thanks for joining in with the Raucous Caucus, Garland. Thank you for listening in to AM 1480. Coming up next is the Inside Scoop. We're going to go over more details of the overhyped trifecta and give you a chance to call in at 202-889-9797. For now, this is Mark Levine. We'll be here every noon, the Raucous Caucus, every Sunday, right here on WEAC Radio. Right now, I am signing off.